Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Get your advanced PhD in WOW from Floor and Decor. If you're a pro, you're already an expert in tile, wood, and stone. And with Floor and Decor's job site delivery, their free design services, and pro rewards that actually reward you, your business is set to grow from one client to the next. Floor and Decor isn't just a couple of aisles. It's an entire store designed to help your business boom. It's Floor and Decor.
Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. We have a lot of distractions in our lives today with all the technology that we have. You sit down at your laptop at night and you think, okay, I'm just going to read this one article. And then an hour later, you're like, what have I've just wasted my life looking at nothing. This is, I can't believe I did this. And then we get away from your laptop and there's the cell phone, the smartphone, with all the pings of emails and text messages and Instagram and Twitter. And then we've got Periscope now. I don't even know what that is. I've seen a lot, but apparently it's a thing now. And it reaches a point where you feel like you don't have any control over your life, and it's overwhelming. We're like, what can I do about this? Well, our guest today makes the argument we should look to the past, particularly great thinkers of the past, to find insights on how we can live a good life in the age of technology. My guest is William Powers. He's the author of the book Hamlet's Blackberry, and in it, he makes the case that individuals like Shakespeare, Thoreau, they have insights and wisdom that can help us manage technology in a way that we can be a part of our life, but not control our life. So if you've been feeling a little frazzled by all the technology in your life, this episode is for you. So without further ado, William Powers, Hamlet's Blackberry. William Powers, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Brett. Great to be here.
All right. So your book is called Hamlet's Blackberry. We'll get to the meaning of that title here in a bit. But it's basically about, you're basically trying to create a philosophy for the good life in the digital age. What inspired you to start this project? Was there a moment that sparked you, like, I need to figure this out? Like, technology has just overrun my life and it's making me miserable. Was there a moment like that?
There were basically two moments, Brett. The first moment was I was invited to take a break from my work as a journalist and to go to Harvard to be sort of a scholar in residence at Harvard at a nice academic center there. And they asked me what I wanted to do a project about. I just had to do a kind of a study and write an essay about what I learned. And I immediately kind of blurted out without even thinking about it. I said, I would like to do something about this, the death of paper that I keep reading about. People keep saying that books on paper and everything hard copy is dying. And something inside me kind of objected to that idea, because I was finding that hard copy reading had become a kind of oasis for me away from my devices. So I spent a semester at Harvard looking into the question of whether print on paper is dying. And I concluded that obviously it's declining, but I kind of predicted that digital reading will only really take off in a big way and conquer print when it does for us what reading on paper has always done, which is sort of center us and allow us to focus and be undistracted in our thinking. And it hasn't done that yet, as you know. Mm-hmm. Digital devices are very good at distracting and dividing our attention. Oh, yeah. So I wrote that essay. It had a lot of technology history in it, including a story from Shakespeare's Hamlet. So I called the essay Hamlet's Blackberry. And then I started to think about whether it could be a book. And the second thing that happened was that my family and I had moved to a small town on Cape Cod from busy Washington, D.C. And my wife and I sort of thought that having moved from a busy place, we were going to find we had this nice, calm, centered life. And that was one of our goals, where we could focus on our family time and so forth together. And it didn't really happen because, of course, we took with us from DC the very thing that was making us busier than ever, which was our digital devices. And I remember looking around me one day at my house, and we were all sort of had our backs to each other, staring into our screens, even though it was like Friday night and nobody was working and we weren't even really together. And that was when I kind of decided I really have to write a book about this and try and solve this problem of technology bringing us so much benefits, but also taking so much away, and maybe devise a philosophy that would help us get out of that conundrum.
Okay, so you was talking about, yeah, it's brought us a lot of benefits, but some of the downsides you've highlighted in your book, and one of them is that it's brought us infinite knowledge to our fingertips, right? You can find out anything about anything. Just go to Wikipedia.
Right. Right.
But we've lost the ability to not only think deeply, but you say to feel deeply.
Mm-hmm.
Can you provide some examples of this loss of ability to think and feel deeply?
Yeah. So on the thinking front, that goes back to this question of, you know, are you really reflecting on whatever it is you're doing and really sort of giving it all of your attention? I think the best creativity comes from really kind of carving out a space where you can focus on that one task that's important to you, whether it's, you know, your work or the book that's in front of you or whatever. If you're constantly, your mind is constantly wandering, you're not going to any depth. It's like being a water bug on the surface of a pond. So that's the thinking side. The feeling side is really about relationships. You know, I think being with people physically is not enough in terms of, you know, real togetherness and depth, emotional connection. And I found that, you know, we see this happening all around us every day. We're not doing that as much as we used to because these amazing little gizmos have gotten in the way of it.
I mean, that kind of raises the question, I mean, why is that? I mean, if we get so much benefit from thinking deeply and feeling deeply and connecting with people on a very intimate level, how is it that something like so frivolous can take us away from that?
Well, I would disagree with you. I don't think it is frivolous. I mean, I think that the power that these devices have to enrich our lives and to put us in touch with other people and ideas and images and, you know, moving videos and all this stuff that comes at us is amazing. The potential of it is fantastic. But our attention is limited. And that's the problem. We've kind of oversaturated that the attention part of our lives to the point where it's just divided up into a million little pieces every day. And that's not taking us to that place that we're talking about, which is the ideal place to be of real presence, real focus. You can't get there if you're just dividing every second up into a bunch of different pieces. And I can, you know, I wrote this book, it's all about getting out of that problem, but I still find myself doing it years later because it's just hard to escape.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting too. So it's not only the technology that distracts us and splits us up into a billion different pieces, but the technology also creates a sense of urgency within us. And you talk about how into our culture today, busyness is sort of a badge of honor, right? When people mm-hmm. ask you, like, how are you doing? Oh, busy, really busy, busy, busy. I mean, that's
right.
I do that all the time.
Right.
But being busy doesn't really mean you're being effective, right? Like you're not actually doing something. Why are we so drawn to being busy and feeling like, even though it makes us feel miserable, because everyone talks like, oh, I'm so busy, right. I can't wait to go on vacation.
Right.
What's the draw there?
Well, you know, there's a lot of theories about this, but the prevailing one that I find most convincing is that it has to do with our amazing brains, you know, this capacity we have for kind of higher level thinking and a curiosity that the biologist E.O. Wilson calls the excess capacity of human beings. We have obviously this X factor in our brains that no other creature has. And our minds are constantly searching for things to latch on to think about, to explore, to do. And that's in many ways the best part of us. That's why we have this incredible civilization and these beautiful cities and all these things that we have came from our, in a sense, from our busyness. But you know, it's always in tension with this other, I think, emotional and intellectual need we have for quiet time and space and a little distance from the busy world, because I think that's where we do a lot of our best thinking and feeling, as we discussed. And technology, all through history, technology has kind of pushed against that need for distance, because think about what communications technologies have done gradually over the last couple thousand years. They've pulled us literally closer together, not literally in the sense of physically, but they've linked us much more tightly together. And that's a challenge. You know, that distance is harder to come by, and it really is, I think, part an important part of the equation of being a full human being.
Having that distance, okay.
Yeah.
But to manage our busyness, we've come up with these productivity tools, right?
Right.
You've got the calendaring tools. You've got like digital assistants that kind of configure. Look at your email inbox. It's kind of creepy. I have Google Now on my phone, mm-hmm. and it will like tell me, like, it knows when I'm about to leave on a flight, and it will say, "You need to leave for the airport right now if you want to get to your flight on time."
Right.
Without me having to do anything. So it's kind of weird. But you make the case that these productivity tools that are supposed to save us from our busyness actually can undermine our productivity. How is that?
Well, they can. You know, it depends on the tool.
Sure.
And so I think the early tools and the way we used the early digital tools, like, you know, the beginnings of email, the beginnings of websites, they were all kind of configured to maximize the incoming and no kind of concern for like our need to, you know, take things a little bit at a time and to be patient or any of that. It was like the more the better. In the book, I call it digital maximalism. And, you know, you just can't get too much. And that was a mistake. And I think at the time I wrote the book, that hadn't fully dawned on civilization, but it has since. And people have been working on that. So now we have productivity tools that I think really do help us. I'll give you a few examples. I mean, you know how you kind of wonder whether you should make that decision about some app you're using, whether you should get the higher level version, you know, pay for it, basically. Sure. A monthly fee. And I've got a couple that I gladly signed up for because they helped me so much in terms of actually being less busy. And there are two that are very popular, but I love Dropbox and I love Evernote. Because they have removed all this kind of filing anxiety, and, you know, everything is like crisply organized, and I don't have to kind of wade through too much stuff to get to where I need to get to in my files. I'm a writer, you know, and I'm now working in the technology world as well. So I have a lot of information I need to save for all my projects, and those help me hugely. And I've noticed that websites have gone the route. I'm sure you've noticed, you guys have actually, I think, done this with your own website, have gone the route of being a cleaner and crisper and less information coming at you. If you compare medium.com, the blogging website, to what blogging websites looked like 8 years ago, it's a completely different animal. We're trying to sort of unclutter, unbusy our lives, and I think that's a great sign.
Okay. Let's talk about one more problem before we start getting into the solutions here. And mm-hmm. one I thought was really interesting is sort of this, sort of a paradox here. So on the one hand, technology separates us, right? For example, your example with your family, where on a Friday mm-hmm. night, everyone had their face in a separate screen and had their backs to each other. But at the same time, it also makes us more attuned to other people's opinions.
Right.
So like, for example, the sociologist David Reisman wrote the book, The Lonely mm-hmm. Crowd. We've talked mm-hmm. about it on our site over 50 years ago. And he basically said that we're becoming an other-directed society, right? At one time, people kind of looked into an eternal compass to navigate, but now they look to the opinions of others to navigate. I mean, and you see that, I guess, with social media, right? That's sort of what how social media works. You put your opinion out there, and you want to get the likes to see if you have the correct opinion. I mean, so what are the downsides of that, though? I mean, what do we lose by putting ourselves so much in the technology that we're so focused on what other people have to say about our opinions?
Yeah, so, you know, I love that book. And I often have fantasized about what if David Reisman could be alive today and see, you know, where we've come. Because he thought the 1950s was that way, everybody being so other-directed. And, of course, that's our whole culture now. You know, and it's sad because technology, social networks, the way they're set up, they're kind of configured to play to our insecurities. You know, none of us really feels like we've totally got our act together and we've gotten to the place we need to get to in life. And we have all these doubts every day that are kind of gnawing at us. And we go on digital and they just multiply because we see these people with these perfect looking lives and we see people getting all these likes and having all these followers we don't have. And it's torture. And yet there's something about it. It's sort of like the busyness. We can't help ourselves. And I think that's tragic. You know, I think it's, you know, if you read Eastern philosophy is especially good at this. But unfortunately, we've been moving for over a decade now in the opposite direction. And that's really one of the things I try to take on in the book.
Okay. So let's kind of just sum up some of the issues that technology has brought into our lives. So there's, a sense of disconnect from others or a sense mm-hmm. of depth. But at the same time, we become very anxious about the opinions of others and what people think about us.
Right.
And then there's sort of the lack of depth in thinking and getting really into a topic and just sort of skittering on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess another one you could say is just splitting our attention into different areas where we feel rushed and really busy when maybe in fact we're not as busy as we think we are, but the technology makes us feel that way.
Yeah. And also I guess related to all those things is just that missing kind of reflection time okay. where I think we can go to this creative place that's a little bit different from depth, but related, where we can have actually fresh thoughts and make new connections that nobody else has made because we're away from all those voices. You know, that's what Facebook and Twitter are basically, is all these people telling us about their ideas they just had. How can you have your own if you're spending all day, you know, immersed in those voices of others? And so that reflective time space apart is crucial.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a thoroughly modern design. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, and the interior is built with robust materials and integrity. The Defender capability is legendary, whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions. The Defender 110 lets you go further and do more. It's built for the modern explorer. They've got lots of cargo space, so we've got plenty of room for your gear. They also have powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system that keeps you connected. And they have an innovative camera technology system that delivers unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. It is ready for a wide range of adventures. The Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. A vehicle made to go further, the Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender. Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. So I got a tree from Fast Growing Trees. I had a tree in my front yard that I had to cut down, a big giant oak tree, because it died. And I wanted to put a maple tree there, one that turned this bright red during the fall. So I found that tree, made sure that it fit the climate that we're at here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Ordered it. A few days later, I got the tree in a box. It's crazy they can send a tree in a box. And I planted it. A few weeks after I planted it, it's already starting to sprout leaves. So I think in a few years, I'm going to have that bright red maple tree that happens in the fall. I'm really looking forward to that. So if you want to try Fast Growing Trees out, this spring they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off with their first purchase when using code manliness at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using code manliness at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code manliness. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Texas Pete is the sauce that allows you to sauce like you mean it. Each Texas Pete sauce is packed with a bold, balanced flavor. The signature tanginess is what makes it a legendary hot sauce that can be used on just about anything. You're definitely going to want to try every flavor. The original hot sauce has a famous secret blend of fermented peppers. Their hotter hot sauce is 3 times hotter than the original, and it's not for the faint of heart. They also got a flavor called Sabor by Texas Pete, adds authentic Mexican flavor. And they also have a dust dry seasoning that matches the flavor of the original hot sauce in a flavorful dry rub. But the flavor that I've been enjoying lately is the sriracha sauce. It's got chili, garlic, and some tropical tangy notes. It's really good. I love putting on my eggs. Texas Pete, sauce like you mean it. Visit TexasPete.com and use the store locator to find Texas Pete products, as well as purchase sauces and get recipe inspiration. And you can use promo code PODCAST24 for 20% off at TexasPete.com. That's PODCAST24 for 20% off at TexasPete.com. Check out the sriracha cha sauce. What's something that works so well that it's basically magic? Air conditioning, noise-canceling headphones, meeting-free Fridays. What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person point-of-service system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps turn your browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, and you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. So I've been using Shopify for nearly 10 years now to sell the merch that we have for The Art of Manliness. Yes, we got merch. Go to store.artofmanliness.com. You can check it out. We got t-shirts, signed copies of our books, things like that. What I love about Shopify, it was super easy to get our store up and running. The design process was very easy. Getting your products into the system, incredibly easy. What I love most about Shopify is just really easy to manage your store, managing inventory, taking care of returns, things like that. If you got a business idea and you need an e-commerce platform for it, check out Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/manliness, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/manliness now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/manliness. Check it out today.
So let's talk about, to develop your philosophy of the good life, you went to the past and looked at some famous philosophers and writers who have thought about the good life. Who are these seven historical philosophers that you used as muses?
Yeah, I'll talk about each one briefly. So, and stop me if I'm taking too long. So, I started with ancient Greece and with Plato, and one of his dialogues of Socrates that he so beautifully recorded. And this is a story that takes place at a time when the great technology revolution was the advent of writing, of the written word. The alphabet was actually turning the world of ancient Greece upside down. Until that moment, people had only communicated orally, and suddenly letters existed and people were learning to read and write. So the philosopher Socrates takes a walk, is walking through Athens, and he runs into one of his students who proposes they go for a stroll outside the walls of the city where they can have a little peace and quiet and a good conversation. And Socrates actually objects and says, well, no, I hate to leave the city. This is where all the action is. And this young student says, well, no, you know, if we really effectively, I'm not quoting him directly, but he says, no, you know, let's take a walk and you'll see if we get out into nature, you'll see our conversation might go to an even better place. So they take this walk. They actually have one of the greatest conversations in the history of philosophy, talking about all kinds of things, love and sex. And what does it mean to write with words versus speaking orally, exactly that challenge they were facing at the time. And two things happen. Socrates winds up being convinced that it really is a great idea to get a little distance from your own busy life, which in his case was that world of conversation in Athens. And second, he remains firm on his in his opposition to writing. He says, don't embrace that new technology. It's going to ruin your mind, he tells his student. So stay away from the alphabet. And I found that story useful because it is a reminder that although technology can be causing us all kinds of challenges, like the ones you and I are talking about now, we can't really see the trajectory of it over the horizon completely where it's going to take us. And in Socrates' case, he was one of the smartest men who ever lived, and he couldn't see that writing would actually become a wonderful tool for growing your mind and having creative thoughts if you use it well. He was this incredibly busy person in ancient Rome, which itself was a very busy place, the capital of this huge empire. In addition to being a philosopher and playwright, at one point he was basically running the empire for the boy Emperor Nero when he was still a boy. So Seneca discovered that in order to really be effective at everything he did, his writing, his thinking, his politics, he had to actually carve out this space kind of apart from all of his activities, similar to Plato, but in a different way. He did it purely as a mental exercise. So he didn't take a walk out in the country to do this. He actually didn't have time to do this. He would sit in a room and focus on he would write one letter to one friend and focus only on that. And don't let any other tasks get in the way. Think about that person, have them in his mind, and really kind of use letter writing as an exercise of focus. And he found it was an incredibly useful way to get away from the urges you and I just talked about, you know, what are people saying about me? What can I check now to keep busy? What's the thing happening now that I have to be a part of? He was able to basically quiet his mind with this simple inner exercise, which I find very inspiring. The next philosopher is Gutenberg, who famously invented the printing press in the middle of the 15th century. And the Gutenberg chapter, I go to Gutenberg not because he was technically a philosopher, because he wasn't. He was a technologist. He liked to build stuff like technologists today. But what he saw, one of his insights was that in his lifetime, up until the invention of his printing press, people had been reading books, actually listening to books be read in huge crowds, because most people couldn't afford books. They were made by hand. They were very expensive. So they would go to churches and other places to experience books read aloud. So reading was this kind of somewhat busy, immersed in the crowd atmosphere. He created the ability through the printing press to have millions of copies of the same book that didn't cost that much to buy, so that eventually people could have a private book that they could even, you know, years later, carry on in their pocket, and having that personal inward experience of depth that we get from reading a book silently and quietly. And that, I think, was a really, really world-changing and underappreciated aspect of his invention. Here we can do this now every day. Sit down with a book. I read every morning at dawn. I get up early and read a book. And I have Gutenberg to thank for that. And that's a kind of distance that serves me all through the day. The third story is the one of the title, Hamlet's Blackberry. My philosopher in that case is Shakespeare, who everybody's familiar with as a great playwright. There's a moment in the play Hamlet where Hamlet meets the ghost of his father, a famous moment in the play, and his father imparts this terrible news that he wasn't killed by the bite of a serpent. He was actually murdered by his brother, who's now the king, Hamlet's uncle. This news is obviously incredibly disturbing to Hamlet, and he doesn't quite know what to do. And he actually talks about his mind being just crowded with all these thoughts. And, you know, he's just kind of in a tizzy, basically. And he suddenly says, "My tables, my tables." And he takes out of his pocket this little tablet that was actually the great sort of personal technology innovation of Shakespeare's time in the real world. So not Hamlet's world, but Shakespeare's world. And it was a little, as I said, it was a tablet. It just had one surface, and it was made from a kind of plaster-like material. And it had a stylus, a little metal stylus. You took the stylus, and you could take notes on the plaster-like surface all day long, to-do lists, people's addresses you wanted to remember, blah, blah, blah. But the beauty of it was at the end of the day, with a swipe of your finger, you could wipe it clean for the next day, so that you were starting with a blank slate the next day. Now, why does this matter? This matters because Shakespeare was living through the print revolution that Gutenberg had begun a century and a half later, but it was really taking off now with newspapers and books being published in incredible quantities, so that people had this feeling of inability to stay up with information. It was impossible to keep up anymore. They felt kind of overwhelmed by information. It was really one of the early cases of information overload. The tables moved in the opposite direction. You could put information on your little device in your pocket, and at the end of the day, make it go away. The ideal of zero inbox that some of us have today, Shakespeare was aware of the use of that and actually put of the usefulness of that and actually put it in the play Hamlet. My next philosopher is Ben Franklin, who I love. He never had negative goals, like drink less wine. Instead, he would say something like, enjoy more sober hours during the day, so that it always had sort of a positive spin and therefore was appealing to him. And I actually was inspired to, when I read Franklin for the book, I was so inspired, I actually started a ritual like that myself, where I set up my own positive goals, including technology goals, and would check off every day how I had done. And I should mention parenthetically that when I told my son, who's 17, that I was doing this chat with you today, Brett, he mentioned that you guys have some kind of version of Franklin's grid that you offer on your website. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he has been using that.
Oh, that's fantastic. Great.
So you have a fan in a 17-year-old here in Massachusetts. Yeah. And so that method, you know, that Franklin, it's not that he invented the idea of having a list of goals, but he took it to a very high level. And I think it's great that people like me and your readers are still inspired by that today. The next philosopher is Henry David Thoreau, who's famous for kind of running away from civilization for 2 years and building his little cabin at Walden Pond here in Massachusetts. supposedly Thoreau was actually a technology hater, but in fact, that's not really true. First of all, he was a writer, so he was a fan of print technology. Second, his family owned a pencil-making company, which was a very powerful technology at that time, and he himself designed some really great pencils as a member of the company. But I talk about Thoreau because I think his experiment at Walden is incredibly useful to us in thinking about how we can actually configure our homes today that are so connected and so potentially busy all the time because of our devices, where we could, if we think properly about our homes, actually create spaces that I call Walden zones, where we put a little distance between ourselves and all that busyness, just the way Thoreau did by moving out into the woods for a few years and getting some quiet time. And I sort of talk in the chapter about some specific ideas, for example, creating a particular room in your house or apartment, or even a part of a room that's no devices allowed, so that we can achieve some of that distance from our digital lives that I think is so crucial. Is famous for coming up with a couple of phrases, including the global village and the medium is the message. Less well known about McLuhan is that he had this kind of very proactive idea about technology that we should all learn to view our technological lives as a kind of a thermostat that we can regulate, and that devices can actually go really, really hot or really, really cool. Hot meaning they kind of fill our ideas with all this stuff, all this information, which can be good in some cases, but often bad. And cool meaning you kind of have a more of a spacious feeling of dealing with the device or the technology, and it kind of gives you a little bit of a sense of being able to participate in a calmer, more focused way. As you can imagine, I favor the latter. So I use a couple of stories McLuhan told to talk about how we should all, in some sense, view ourselves as being in the driver's seat of our digital lives and be able to regulate the heat or the coolness ourselves by just being more thoughtful about how we use our devices. So that's my seven philosophers. And if you want to dig into any of them or follow up on any of them, just let me know.
Yeah. Well, what I think is interesting about all of them is that you're not saying like get rid of technology. You're not like a Luddite. I guess the underlying theme is like be more thoughtful and intentional about your technology.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, one of the things that's happened to me since the book came out is I'm now working in the technology world. I'm at the MIT Media Lab, actually working on new technology ideas in the area of social media. And that happened through the book because some of the folks in that world liked reading it and wanted to work with me. And it kind of underlines the point you just raised, which is that I'm actually a big technology fan and even an early adopter of technologies. And I don't want to throw them out the window. I think this revolution is ultimately going to take us to a fantastic place. But we are not even close to there yet. And this is one of the areas we really need to work on.
Yeah. I remember when I was in college, I took a philosophy of science class. Mm. And one of the main points the professor made in that class was that one of the problems with modern science is that we no longer have time to develop a philosophy towards the technology that we have. Right?
Right.
Before we had the wheel, and like we had a long time to figure out how the wheel plays in our life. We had writing, we had like a long time to kind of figure out. And now the way that technology advances and like we're getting all this new social media stuff, like I guess there isn't a time to really pause and think about, okay, how's this going to fit into our life? And like, what is it,
right?
How's it going to change things? So I guess, yeah, the goal is just, the idea is just to be more thoughtful and think about how this technology will affect us and what role it's going to play in our life.
Yeah, and at the risk of seeming to tout my own workplace, which I guess I'm about to do, we get technology ideas and work on them in kind of isolation from the commercial marketplace, which makes it so hard to be thoughtful because of the pressure to be profitable and to deliver for shareholders and so forth. We kind of have a sort of a bit of a sandbox where we can play around with stuff, see if it works, test it with, you know, our colleagues and with the public. And then maybe at some point down the road, if it feels like it could be a really great potential for the public, then turn it into a company. And that's exactly what we need more of, I think, is that kind of thinking about, you know, a philosophical approach to technology like your course offered.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. Something I just learned about the Amish. Like, there's all this idea that the Amish are very anti-technology. Like they don't use anything, which is true. Like they don't use cars or, you know, cell phones or things like that. But they're not anti-technology per se. They're just very picky about the technology they use. I guess the idea is that before they'll introduce a new piece of technology, like they'll get together and like talk about, will this change our way of life to a negative way? And if it does, then we'll shun that. But if it will benefit us, we'll bring it in. So I've been trying to like take more of an Amish approach to technology. Not that I'm going to get rid of my computers or laptops or Instagram, but thinking more deeply about, you know, is this making my life better or is it making me not happy?
Yeah, that's exactly what I do, Brett. I have the same approach. I try to be really thoughtful about every possible, you know, app, platform, device I use, and kind of, I don't literally think of it as the Amish approach. I love that thought. And in fact, I have actually heard from some Amish people since the book came out that it was kind of in sync with their point of view. Yeah, but I think they've got it. You know, I mean, I think we all, especially today, we all need a dose of that. I mean, so many of us are excited about technology, but at the same time, kind of drowning in it, you know, and we're, it's sometimes I think it's making us less human rather than more. And that's a problem.
Yeah. So you mentioned one thing you can do is in your home, sort of create walled-ins in your home where there's like no devices allowed. Another tip that you talk about in your book and you still implement to this day and we've written about on the site is this idea of tech Sabbaths. Can you explain what a tech Sabbath is for those who aren't familiar with and how they can implement it into their own life?
Yes. So I love these tech Sabbaths. We called ours, we invented ours, I guess it was 2006, so quite a long time ago when my son was 8 years old. And we called it Internet Sabbath because what it was all about was specifically the internet. So it wasn't about technology per se. We didn't unplug our TV. We didn't, you know, actually stop using our phones for voice and texting and so forth. But we did spend every weekend for 5 years completely off the internet. So the modem was actually unplugged Friday night in our house and not plugged in again until Monday morning. And that was unbelievable learning experience for all of us. And it was amazing, this other place that we went to every weekend together. It was very challenging in the beginning, very hard to wean ourselves off. But once we got into the habit of doing it and began to see the potential of that disconnected time, it was amazing. We all have our own sort of smaller version of that now because we've kind of gone off into the world and done various things that require a little bit more than 5 days online. I do Saturdays offline. My wife tries to do Sundays offline. And my son, who's away at school now, does no video games at school. Gotcha. No video gaming at all. So we all do our kind of Sabbath equivalents. And I find that it allows the mind to, it's like, you know how when you use a muscle a lot, that muscle is always available to do tasks mm-hmm. when you want to do it because you've been working on that muscle. It allows the mind to kind of always be able to switch into disconnected mode when you need it, even when you're not doing the Sabbath. So I find that if I keep my regular Sabbath on Saturdays, if I'm having a really crazy digital day on a Wednesday, I can still sort of step back and breathe and go to that place because I was there fairly recently. People who never go to that place, who never disconnect, I think they have a much harder time.
Well, Bill, where can people learn more about your work?
So my website is easy enough to remember, williampowers.com. And there's more on the book there, more about the book there. It's still for sale in the bookstores and on all the digital bookstores, digital websites. And I'm on Twitter, @HamletsBB, @HamletsBB. And folks can email me through my website or reach out to me on Twitter if they want to comment on the book or have any questions or whatever. I'd love to hear from them.
Awesome. Well, William Powers, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Brett. Really enjoyed it.
Our guest today was William Powers. He's the author of the book, Hamlet's Blackberry, Building a Good Life in the Digital Age. You can find that on Amazon.com.
Well, that wraps up another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For more manly tips and advice, make sure to check out the Art of Manliness website at artofmanliness.com. And until next time, this is Brett McKay telling you to stay manly.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.